Whether you've been gardening for decades or you're just learning which end of the hoe to use, we're glad to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller here, and there's no better resource than horticulture educators and agricultural agents who work with UW Extension. We're always happy to have them on, and today, especially happy to welcome Erin LaFave to the show. She is a horticulture educator for Eau Claire County, joins us from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire. And Erin, thanks so much for joining us today on Garden Talk.
Well, thank you for having me. This is going to be a fun adventure, I suppose.
It will be. You will have lots of fun. You will really enjoy this experience because we have many gardeners listening, lots of people listening who are gardeners. Some of them are very good gardeners. They're master gardeners. And then there are others that are just getting started. So, and I know you like working with sort of the first-time gardeners.
Yes, I really like to walk them through the process and encourage them to keep trying, even if things don't go the way they expected the first time around.
Yeah. Overall, how's the growing season been so far in your area of the state?
Well, the growing season for vegetable gardens is pretty good. It's a little bit behind than we were last year. And the other, the trees and the shrubs and everything like that, some of those have been affected by the drought from last fall. So we're seeing interesting things in the lawn and in trees and shrubs versus our vegetable gardens.
Yeah, and pests or diseases, anything like that occurring?
Right now, squash vine borer is out and the squash bugs. And we are seeing a very low number of Japanese beetles, which is a relief.
Yeah, I can understand that because you folks went through some pretty nasty years of those bugs.
Yes, the Japanese beetle, I'm sure people in Madison have seen for a while, but yeah. Some of our gardeners up here, they see them for the first time, and some of them have been battling for a much longer time.
When we think about first-time gardeners, what are some things that they need to think about in terms of getting going and having a successful gardening experience?
I always say start much smaller than you want to, because just like when we're eating, you know, our eyes are bigger than our stomachs. Sometimes that happens with putting in gardens, too. We have these great visions of what we want to do, and then we put them in, and we realize we didn't account for our lives. For example, the family duties that we have, our jobs, and we forget that they actually have to be watered frequently and weeded and all a host of things that just don't come into the forefront of your mind when you're planning it. So I say start small. You can always expand if you feel that you were successful and you can handle that in terms of your time and the money needed to go in, because there's a little money that you need to put in it for the first-time gardener.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You've got seeds and equipment to deal with, although it doesn't have to be a lot of equipment.
No, it doesn't have to be a lot, especially if people are building raised garden beds. That can be a little bit more investment. I always say look in your resources, too. See if somebody has some extra soil that you can bring in, some boards that you can use. And for people who are tilling the ground and bringing it up, there isn't as much financial investment in there, but a little bit more time investment because you have to get the turf up usually and also amend the soil to get it full of nutrients and organic matter, as our soils up here tend to be sandy.
Yeah. And I think probably more people are in flower gardening than vegetable gardening, would you guess? No?
I just feel like we're seeing more and more vegetable gardeners.
Well, that certainly is. Yeah. Yes, I'm certain that's there's mm-hmm. been growing interest in vegetable gardening. But so both probably, eh?
Both, yeah. But I would kind of agree with you, though. We're more likely to see people's flower gardens and what they're doing because we usually put that in our front yards. And so when you look around your community, you're more likely seeing the flower gardeners and the vegetable gardens that can be tucked away sometimes.
You know, it probably doesn't hurt to talk with people who garden around, neighbors who are gardening around you, because they're probably growing veggies and things that work well in the soil conditions and the weather conditions of where you're located.
That's a very good point, because some neighborhoods that may be seeing an influx in pests, so they'll say, you know, the roses are being attacked by rose chafers all the time, and maybe another spot in your town, they're not getting that pest as much. So that is an excellent piece of advice, is to kind of ask around in your little micro environment, as I like to say.
Realistically, how much time will you have to spend in a garden?
It depends on our rain season, doesn't it? But if you're using good weed management practices, such as mulching, then you can really reduce the amount of time that you're in there. If you can put your watering system on a timer, which is fairly inexpensive, you know, roughly $10 to buy that unit, you may not even be putting a lot of time out there watering as well. But it's always good to be walking through the garden anyways, watering and weeding, just to keep your eye on any pests that are coming in or diseases that might be taking over. So I like to spend at least 20 minutes in my garden a day just walking through and taking a look, and then watering, you know, I'd say you're in there at least 5 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And some of those big vegetable gardens are doing a lot of weeding, so then your hours increase.
You know, and I was looking through the garden, through our garden last night, and it smells great. I even like the smell of those big old tomato plants that are, you know, just getting ready to, well, some of them are giving us tomatoes right now, but there are other varieties that have yet to come. But even tomato plants to me smell just wonderful.
Especially when you're watering them and kind of bumping up to them. Yeah, it is a great aroma.
So the 20 minutes really isn't a hardship when you get right down to it.
I don't think so. It's kind of enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian in Burlington has a question for you. Hi, Brian. Thank you very much for calling. Brian, are you there? Well, let's see. Let's try Pat and Elroy then. Pat, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Aaron. I have two questions, if I'm allowed to ask two.
Okay.
The first one concerns apple trees. When we bought our property, there were two trees here, and one is definitely a Macintosh. The other one, I have no idea what it is, and it makes incredibly good applesauce. And it's an old tree, and I wanted to know if there's anybody either in the Extension Service or the university who can identify the variety of apple tree that I have.
Yes, there is. I would be contacting Brian Smith, who could help with that. And what county is Elroy in?
Juneau.
Okay. So you could do one of a few things. You could find your local extension office and send them a picture.
Okay.
And perhaps then they could send it on to Brian Smith to help them identify it.
And Brian is?
He's a fruit specialist at UW River Falls,
mm-hmm,
with Extension. And he knows his varieties pretty well. And sometimes, sometimes you need a leaf, a fruit, and a flower picture to really get a good idea of what the variety is.
Okay.
So that would be my suggestion, is try to get a picture, or I don't know if you'd want a sample in his hands, but I think just a picture sample would suffice.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right.
I will try that.
All right.
My other question has to do with getting vegetable seedlings going at this time of the year in the garden under shade cloth. And I've started some leaf lettuce in the house, and I did transplant that out to a raised bed, and I've got a 50% shade cloth on it, and that seems to be doing okay. But I've also started some kale in the house and some spinach and some dill and cilantro and some more different lettuces. And I was wondering if things like kale and spinach need to be put under shade cloth, if anything does at this time of the year when you set it out in the garden. And then the other part of that is, what time of the year do you know to take the shade cloth off, like in the fall.
Mm-hmm. So I'm imagining the shade cloth is because of the intense direct sun that we're getting in part of this, the part of the year of the summer. And kale and spinach typically like it sort of cool, and they don't like that direct hotness. So I would say the shade cloth is a great idea. When to take it off? That is a good question. I'd say when it is below 70 degrees.
Okay.
And I say that just because the intensity of heat isn't going to bother them as much.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Good questions there. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, you are next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I'm just calling in. You spent the opening bit talking about how much time it takes, how much time you need to spend in the garden.
Yeah.
You spoke about spending about 20 minutes walking around. Well, we call that petting the garden.
Oh.
Which reflects the pleasure, not a sense of work, but a sense of pleasure in doing it.
I love that, petting the garden. That is great because...
Clean out, pet the garden.
Yeah, because you're not just looking for pests and problems, right? You're actually looking, what is blooming today and what is fruited out today and, you know, what things can I finally enjoy that while I was away at work or running errands, what beautiful things have actually finally come out?
Yep.
Oh, I love it. Let's go pet the garden.
Yep.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Stella.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I love that. That's great. We were out petting the garden last night, and see, we were lucky because we had a couple of coneflowers, new types, colorful, different colored coneflowers that we didn't have in our garden, and we planted them last night and moved some other flowers around last night and then watered a bit, but then we got a nice rain overnight, and it was perfect.
Yeah, I love taking that walk. And it's kind of like Christmas, isn't it? What thing is opening up today for us?
It was just a lot of fun. Nancy in Salem, your turn. Hi.
Hi, this is Nancy. Good morning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
My question regards blossom end rot, primarily on tomatoes. I'm not a new gardener, and I just have been plagued with this for 3 years. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Are you growing the tomatoes in the ground or in pots?
No, they're in the ground. I start them all from seed, and
okay.
Primarily that is my main crop is tomatoes. So I don't have a giant space, so I don't have a lot of rotation going on. But I checked the pH. We added manure. My water that I water with, but haven't had to water too much this year. The pH is actually like 8, but I've only watered like 3 times because we've had wonderful rain.
Yeah.
And when do you put them in the ground?
I wait till the soil is usable. Maybe I try and push it a week before May 30th.
Okay. Yep.
But not much.
Yeah, they typically like the soil really warm, and they find that tomatoes that are put in a cool ground may have a little bit more susceptibility to blossom and rot. The other thing I would consider is checking to see what the available calcium is in your soil. Now, it's usually not a calcium issue per se. It's the fact that when the plant is uptaking nutrients, for some reason, the calcium can't get to the blossom and subsequently the fruit. And that usually is caused by some sort of stress factor or extreme fluctuations in humidity or availability of the moisture in the ground. So it also can happen with fluctuations in temperature. So something is making the plant not get that calcium to the fruit. And it's typically not a calcium issue. However, in your case, it sounds like you're struggling with this year after year. You may want to check the calcium levels in the soil.
Okay. Well, again, we have such an alkaline, limestone base. I'm thinking, that's a good idea. I'll check on that. But I keep thinking that can't really be it, and it's more
sure.
of a water issue. The other thing I do is I take all my grass and put it over grass clippings that aren't no pesticide or herbicide on them and put them around my tomatoes and my as a mulch. Is that changing anything for me?
It helps actually maintain soil moisture, which is what is helpful for blossom end rot, so that it's not going very, very dry and then very, very wet. And Larry started out asking you if they were in containers, and I usually start asking that question too, because what we find with ones in containers is that they dry out rapidly, and then we deluge them with water, and then they dry out rapidly, and that constant extreme fluctuation is what can start that blossom end rot. So the soil in your area, it sounds like you're doing the right things with the mulching.
Water, if you're getting an inch of water a week or so.
And I have the irrigation, the drip system is in, and I'm trying not to overwater. I thought maybe that I was doing that last year. This year it's not nearly as bad, but I'm still throwing away tons of tomatoes. Do you think that it has anything to do with me starting my own seeds? Although the plants I bought at the nursery, I bought four that I purchased, and I see it on those as well.
I don't think that's a factor. What about your fertilizing technique? Sometimes if they get too much nitrogen, that can cause a little bit of a problem too.
Well, this year we had the soil tested. I was a little bit low in nitrogen, but before we even got the results, we had tilled all the soil and put in mushroom compost. So maybe it wasn't quite enough, but I thought it was a good move.
Yeah. Wow. Given everything that you've said, maybe testing for available calcium. That's available.
You sound like you're doing many of the right things.
Yeah, I'm at a loss to think of anything else, but it certainly would. I mean, there should be plenty of calcium in the soil, but the available calcium might be the issue. So you need to take a look at that, Nancy. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate having some fun today talking with Erin LaFave. She is the horticulture educator for Eau Claire County. Our guest here on Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Erin LaFave, horticulture educator for Eau Claire County with the UW Extension. Great to have her along for this edition of Garden Talk. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And please go ahead and post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. This morning, I was walked to the D.C. Smith greenhouse and saw the corpse flower that is in bloom at the D.C. Smith greenhouse on the UW-Madison campus. And I have a photo. We posted a photo of it. You may be interested in taking a look at it, so you can find that on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and I hope you'll take a look at it. Kind of smelly, a little bit smelly. Have you ever smelled one of those, Erin?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you smelled it before you saw it.
Yeah.
I was able to see it when I was on the Madison campus many years ago.
Yeah, they're kind of an interesting flower for sure. Well, we have a question from a first-time gardener. Julie emailed, said, I made the mistake in my first garden and planted tomato plants too close together. Now it's like a forest. Hard to see the tomatoes, and they're not changing color yet. Should I be pruning them somehow?
I would say that's a great idea. For pruning, I would start taking some of the lower leaves off, making sure that branches off almost, so that they're not too close to the soil, so maybe a good 6 inches up. And then prune off any of those branches that aren't bearing fruit. Uh-huh. It can also relieve some of the heaviness that tomato plants get and they start tipping over.
By this time they should, if they're not bearing fruit, if a branch isn't bearing fruit, it's not going to.
Not necessarily. Sometimes later on they'll start producing flowers. But if you see that your plants are loaded with the tomatoes, you know, you don't necessarily need to have every single branch producing. What else would I suggest? sometimes if they're really loaded with fruit as well, you might want to sacrifice a couple fruits. But that's, you know, it's kind of up to you and what you need. But sounds like you've learned a valuable lesson with tomato plants. They need a lot of space, don't they?
Yeah, and when you put them in, you know, if you've got the plants themselves, you put them in and, well, it looks like you should be able to put them a foot or two apart, but no. You need to, how far do they, what's a good distance for a tomato plant?
Well, it kind of, it depends on the variety, but I'd like to get a good, you know, four feet.
Yeah.
And not necessarily because you don't want them touching. So they get really big. Some of them get really big, depending on the variety, but you don't want them touching. You want that airspace to flow through there.
We have Matthew from Madison on board next. Hi, Matthew. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good afternoon. I thought if I could provide a few comments. We grow about 1,500 tomato plants every year for selling fruit. The most recent comment about spacing, we are actually a lot tighter than that. We typically plant cherry and grape tomatoes 1 foot apart in the row, and we plant them in a straight row on black plastic mulch. And we use what's called a Florida weave system. Anybody can use it. Essentially, what you're doing is providing a stake in between each plant if they're wood. I personally prefer to use steel posts because they have little nubs on the outside to keep your string at the right level. And then as the plant grows, every 10 inches, you tie or wrap around the post, go down one side of the tomato plant, come back to the other side, and wrap around each time, pull the string tight. And as the plant grows, you're essentially encaging it with inside of this woven net, so the plant will grow straight up. Now, in order to have closeness, that type of closeness, you have to sucker the plant for about the first foot off the ground because you don't want it spreading all over the place. That works really good for the cherry and grapes. On the larger plants, where you're going to get regular-sized tomatoes, we typically do 18 inches. And if you have space problems, it's good to go with a determinant plant, where the plant sets all of its fruit over a short period of time, and it doesn't keep growing the whole season long. Then, as far as the watering and the blossom end rot that they were having, we typically find that that's always related to water, and the plant is not able to move calcium within itself. So what happens is when you have a potassium and calcium imbalance, the same thing with magnesium in your soil, the plant will uptake one element over the other. So you might have a whole bunch of calcium available inside of your soil, but if you have a cation imbalance, meaning too much of one of the other elements, the plant will not be able to take it up and move it properly. So when it gets really hot out, the plant will favor new green growth over the fruit. So you might have all of this calcium, but if it's hot and the plant doesn't have enough water, then it's going to divert the calcium to growing new green growth, hence blossom end rot, lack of calcium within the plant. So the way you can watch your water, and if you really care about your tomato plants, you have to spend a little money, they make a device called a tensiometer. And it's essentially a way of measuring the amount of moisture that's available to a plant in the soil. And it's simply a ceramic tip on the end of a plastic tube that has a little vacuum gauge in it. You fill the tube up with water, you screw the cap on, and you stick it in the soil. It acts like a fake root. And as the soil dries, there will be tension placed on that ceramic tip, and it will want to pull the water that's inside of the tube into the soil. You know, your little meter will go up, and once it hits a particular reading, for us it's sandy loam, so anything over 30 centibars tells us it's time to water. And you'll be very surprised, most homeowners are, home gardeners are, that they're not watering enough or they're watering too much. So if you have a device there that can tell you when to water, then you'll be able to eliminate, in most cases, the blossom end rot. Now with a high pH, she's probably going to have to start using some commercial nitrogen fertilizers. Urea will work good, so will ammonium nitrate, to lower the pH down. Tomatoes don't like real acidic roots, and that is probably what's causing her blossom end rot.
Hmm. And the device that you talked about again, what was the name of it?
It's called a tensiometer, like tension. T-E-N.
Oh, tensiometer, okay.
Yeah, and the company that makes them is actually, if you just type in tensiometer into Google, you'll find them. They're out of California. And you can get the cheap analog ones, 12-inch depth. They come in many different lengths, but 12 inches is typically what we use. You just push it right into the ground, probably costs around $60, and they last 20 years as long as you take care of them.
Matthew, great, some great advice here. We'll post a tensiometer up on my Facebook page in case people want to take a look at it. And Aaron, comment from you.
I love meeting people who work specifically with one crop because they have all these wonderful in-depth answers to working, you know, specifically with that one thing. And that was excellent advice. I was wondering what he used for his roping, his rope, because sometimes I've noticed any sort of like a trellising system, sometimes that can rub on the plant. And I was mm-hmm. wondering what he was using for that. I've in my own garden, I like using pantyhose, old pantyhose, and that seems to not rub on the stem and cause any abrasion. But I had wondered what he was using for that.
Matthew, well, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. We typically use baler twine, and the abrasion to the plant with most of the varieties that we grow, even if there is a small abrasion to it, hasn't caused us any problems. We pick baler twine, and it's usually the sisal stuff, because sisal is made from a grass. So at the end of the season, when it's time to clean all of this stuff up, most of the home garden stores will sell what they call tomato twine. It's nothing but a thin nylon twine. It's very cheap. It works, but at the end of the season, when it's time to remove this Florida weave system, which is what I was talking, the type of trellising system I was talking about, when it's time to clean that up and you start cutting all of these things apart, you're going to wind up with little pieces of nylon all over the place, and it doesn't decompose. So if you have a small number of plants and you don't want to spend a lot of money and you can't see where you're ever going to use 15,000 feet of baler twine, nylon might work fine. But for me, we put out about 5 miles of it every year. So at the end of the year, when it's time to clean up, if we're going through and cutting it, we don't have to worry about if some of it falls in the ground because it's going to decompose over the next year or so. And most of them, when the twine says it's treated, that scares people off. Most of the treatment is linseed oil to prevent rats from chewing on it and to help prevent it from breaking down so quickly. But in reality, the twine is out there for maybe 90 days, so it's going to last perfectly fine. So the hardest part with a trellising system, and it's even hard for me, is when the plants reach the top of your T-posts. Ours are usually 6.5 feet tall. When you're growing indeterminates, meaning they keep putting on new growth, you have to go along with some shears, like a head shears, and chop off the top of the tomato plants. Otherwise, they won't put the necessary energy into finishing all those green tomatoes that are sitting there over the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks before frost comes, and then you essentially have a whole bunch of really nice tomatoes that just got frosted.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Good, a lot of good information there. Thank you so much, Matthew, and I would note that he described the weave system for tomatoes, Florida weave system for tomatoes. There are some online images of what those look like. So you can go online to, just put in how to Florida weave tomatoes, and you're going to get a few good pictorial demonstrations of how to do that. And you're right, Aaron. It's always fun to talk with somebody who really specializes in a single one fruit or one vegetable.
Yes, they're the experts in that one thing. People say to me, oh, you're a garden expert. I say, oh, I just know kind of the surface amount of information to grow things. But that really detailed information comes from people like Matthew who work with it, or the specialists who are studying it in depth day in and day out. And their knowledge is invaluable from growers like Matthew and from the specialists.
Thanks again. I really appreciate it, Matthew. We are going to take a call next from Diane in Milwaukee. Diane, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I wonder if you can help me identify a plant. It came onto my pot on the patio about 2 years ago, and it's lots of leaves about the size of a maple leaf. It's a brownish green on top, and you turn it over, it's a beautiful violet purple. And it puts up a stalk or more with tiny, tiny, minuscule white flowers.
That doesn't ring a bell. A picture of that would be great.
You have a computer, so.
Sure. Can you take a picture of it and send that to a postal address?
No, I can't. I'm low vision.
Sure.
It's a beautiful purple underneath, and it's got many leaves. And it puts up, in July, it puts up a stalk. I have three stalks on it now. And to overwinter it, I just move it over to my tomato garden and put the bottom in a hole.
Wow. How tall is it, do the
stalks? It's not very tall. It gets quite wide, maybe a foot wide, with many leaves. It's brownish-green on top of the leaves and purple underneath the leaves. You turn them over, they're beautiful purple.
Tell you what, Diane, I think
somebody will know.
Yeah, we've got Aaron. You've got Aaron and I stumped here. So it's very possible that our listeners are going to have some suggestions, and I bet those suggestions will come flying in the next few minutes. So stay listening, and we'll see what other people have to say.
Here's another suggestion. Perhaps she could have a neighbor take a picture or take just a leaf sample and bring it into the local extension office for her. I know lots of people do that for my office as well. If somebody else can't get it in there, or if you got a grandkid or a neighbor who's got one of those nice phones or something, they can take a picture and send it off to I know there's a good horticulture educators in Milwaukee County.
Oh, absolutely. Diane, good luck. Thank you, and stay listening. Julie in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. We have a bunch of cucumber plants that we are watering with soaker hoses to not have powdery mildew. We have a ton of flowers, but hardly any cucumbers, so I'm just wondering if they're not getting enough water with our soaker hoses, or if the cucumbers are coming, or what we need to do.
My first thought is just keep waiting. There's a chance that they're not coming yet. And like I said earlier, here in Eau Claire County, I've noticed things are just slightly behind. Last year, I saw fruit on certain vegetables that are not in fruit right now. But it's really that nothing's wrong at this point. And you have flowers.
There's a number of different varieties, and one of them that's like a supposed to be like little pickles. Those are getting cucumbers, a few of them. And we have like the ones that look like lemons. They have a few, but the like straight eight ones, like just a ton of blossoms, but no cucumbers. So, and we have them growing up on a trellis because we wanted to keep them off the ground, because last year we got so much powdery mildew it just devastated the whole cucumber patch.
Well, that's a great solution to put them up there. Did you plant them all at the same time?
Most of them were planted about the same time, and most of them were like varieties that said they were like 65 to 70 days to mature. So I'm just wondering, maybe it's just because the weather's been sort of erratic. So I guess we'll just wait. I was just curious to see if they needed more water, if we needed to have the soaker hoses on longer, or if it's just we just have to be patient.
Yeah.
I think you have your answer.
Okay.
Just be patient. Yep.
Well, thank you.
Oh, thanks, Julie. Well, now you've got me thinking about cucumbers, because just the other night, Renee, had some cucumbers that she sort of, not finely chopped, but just kind of chopped up a little bit, and then added some red onion, chopped up a bit, and then some little slices off a carrot, and then put some little vinegar and a little sugar, mixed those together, and then topped with some chopped up peanuts.
Mm.
And oh, is it good.
I was going to say, put a little mango in there, too.
Mango would be good. Oh, yeah, mango would be good. But I'm telling you, I don't know how many cucumbers we I could just make a meal on that. It was really good. Cucumbers are wonderful. Margaret in Mount Horeb, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question a little bit off the subject. I am interested in grafting an apple tree, and I just wanted to know if you have any information on that as to what time of the year and how large the tree that I'm going to graft onto needs to be and how established.
We do have a fact sheet on grafting, and sometimes in certain extension offices, they'll do grafting workshops. I don't have a lot of experience with grafting, but I would check out some of those publications that we have on our Learning Store about grafting, and also call, if you're in Mount Horeb, then you're near Dane County, I believe.
Yes.
And I know that they have a, Lisa Johnson is the horticulture educator there. You might want to contact her.
Yeah.
All right.
She may well be doing something in the way of a grafting workshop. Michael Durr's book, isn't that? Doesn't his book cover grafting?
That sounds familiar, but I haven't read that one myself.
It's one of those that they're kind of, it's a kind of an expensive book, and it's more likely to find it in the library. Although it's available out there, you can probably get used copies of it, but.
I do know that people who graft say that you have to practice with it. It's not always something you get the first time, but if you do, then you've got a great skill.
And for our caller earlier who wondered about that plant, for a plant identification, Pat called in and said she thought it might be Heuchera, which is, I believe it's spelled H-E-U-C-H-E-R-A.
Oh, the coral bells.
Yeah. It's a variety of coral bells.
Yes, some of the coral bells have a green leaf and some of them have a purple hue to them. And I would say that looks kind of like a maple leaf too. So it would be a perennial. So she's right in overwintering it. And that's a very good possibility.
Yeah. And actually a couple of people, Susie and Pat, are thinking coral bells. So I think that might be a good answer. At least it's worth looking into a little bit further. Our guest today is Aaron LaFave. Aaron is the horticulture educator for Extension for Eau Claire County. Great to have her with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, there's a lot more to cover with Aaron LaFave about getting the most out of your late summer garden. Love to hear from you. Give us a call. We have open lines at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. An email question from Adam. My wife and I just bought a new house. The yard has no planting beds or gardens, nothing. We're planning on starting a vegetable garden in the spring, about 10 feet square. What do you recommend for starting a new garden from scratch? Specifically, what should we bring in for the garden soil?
Well, first I want to say make sure you got it in a place with full sun. Especially when you're in a new house, you may not be familiar exactly where the sun is setting and rising, and in terms of what trees are creating shade and the houses around that might be creating shade. So consider that. And for a 10 by 10 garden, start out by what you will eat, and then consider, I would consider lettuces, spinach. I would stay away from vine crops, just because they take up so much room. Unless you're just really bent on having those cucumbers, then, you know, you can do that because there are some trellising systems that you can do. And we have a great fact sheet with Extension on trellising and staking. It tells you different ways you can do that. Beans, bush beans, the green beans would be another great suggestion. You could put in some tomatoes and peppers too. But those are some of the things I'm thinking for, a 10 by 10. And there's also some really great tools online for planning out gardens, especially in your first-time gardener. If you don't know how big that tomato plant's going to get, how much space bush beans will take up, some of those nice free online tools will map it out for you so you can get an idea of how long your row should be and how much to put in. I would stay away from corn as well because they take up a lot of room, and the tallness of those stalks might shade out some of the other stuff. If you had a bigger garden, you might be able to put in those taller, viney crops.
And he's talking about bringing in garden soil, which I'm not sure if it's going to be he's going with a raised bed or.
Yeah.
If he's going with a raised bed, I'd consider, you know, instead of 10 feet square, I'd consider something.
Right. If you're if you're considering a raised bed, you want it wide enough so that you could reach to the middle on both sides. So for a short person like me, 5'3", that's not very far in. So consider that. You may want to do a couple beds instead. And in terms of bringing in the soil, have a reputable place that has soil. You may even want to go check it out if you're bringing the soil in, because sometimes the soil's coming right off a field or a construction plot. You have that extra soil. You want to see if it feels really sandy or if it feels like it has a lot of clay in it. You don't really want that. You want a nice, pliable soil, and hopefully it's mixed with some compost in there and just a nice mix. That's the only way I can describe it over the air is if it just feels like a good, kind of like a, oh gosh, I don't know. Larry, do you have any suggestion on to describe that?
No, it's just, I don't know. I don't know how it's, tell you what, if you go to a garden center, you have a chance to get your hands in some good soil at the garden center, you get an idea for what it feels like. That might be a way to do it. Or buy a bag. Just go ahead and buy a bag. And that'll give you an idea. That's as good as I can come up with at the moment.
That's better than what I just did. So that's great.
Oh, man. Well, John in Medford emailed, says our red Norlin potato plants are showing stress and turning yellow. Plants were planted in early June. Our soil is clay. But we planted in raised beds. Weather's been on the dry side in July. The plants are good size, but have not bloomed.
Hmm. And you said potato, is that right?
Yeah, Norlin potatoes, they're turning yellow. The leaves, I assume, are turning yellow. So it sounds like they're not getting any.
Yeah, he says clay. Yeah, clay would be too much water. But he said he brought in, he put them in a raised bed. I'm just wondering what kind of soil he brought in. The other thing to consider is if maybe they're already done producing. I have potatoes that I put in around that same time, June, and I'm noticing them turning yellow too. And sometimes that's just the sign that they're ready to be plucked from the ground. There are a number of insects that can come along and create some problems too, and they feed on the potato leaves, and then a disease can kind of subsequently come from that. So those are some of the thoughts that I have about that. He could again bring in those a sample or send a picture to one of the most local horticulture educator and sometimes even agricultural agents in the county may be able to help as well.
Absolutely. A little bit more in the tomato advice area, a Facebook comment from Judy, who likes the discussion on tomatoes this morning. Her two cents on blossom end rot, she had the problem for years, but read about planting an eggshell in the hole before planting the tomato. It's worked for me for many years. It's hard for me to imagine that calcium would break down fast enough, at least the first year, for the tomato plant to have access to it, but.
Right, especially eggshells. They just break down so much so slowly, but she's doing it year after year, which is great. And I always say, hey, if it works, it's not hurting anybody, it's not hurting the environment.
Absolutely.
Then perhaps you're on to something for your garden.
Absolutely. And here's some advice for first-time gardeners from Sarah. Don't forget to fence your garden. Those rabbits can give you lots of heartache if they chomp everything down.
Certainly. And here it's deer. In my neighborhood, we have deer that walk down the street that they're so tame. So definitely ask around, like you were saying, Larry, earlier, ask around your neighbors what pests they see a lot. And, you know, a good outside animal can help, you know, like if you have a fenced in yard already and your cats go out, I know my cats just brought me a rabbit the other day, so they help with that. But a good barking dog, you know, can help as well.
Absolutely. Frank in Arborvita, thanks for calling. Hi. Oops. Hold on a second, Frank.
For many years in my Port Edwards garden.
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can. Go ahead.
I said I've grown beets for many years in my Port Edwards garden. I'm up here in Arborvita. And I've had a garden up here for 20 years and grown just about everything. And this year I decided, I'm going to grow some beets. I put the darn things in back in May, and I got, the first two leaves and nothing else. They're just sitting there. They just don't grow. Have you any idea what the problem might be?
Well, I have heard this comment come from several people this year about beets, and for the life of me, I can't figure it out. There are some pests that can affect it, but you're saying yours are just kind of stunted. They're not going anywhere?
Oh, yeah. They only got, 1-inch long cotyledons, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. And have you had beets in the garden previously?
Not in this place.
Okay.
Not in this place. No, I think I've heard somewhere that there's something about beets requiring boron in the soil.
That I'm not sure on. Would you say, though, that your soil, sometimes the soil has to, for root crops, has to be nice and soft in order for them to get going?
Pretty sandy.
Yeah. I don't have any great advice on beet growing.
Radishes did well.
Okay.
But you've heard the same thing, Aaron, from other people.
Yeah, and I've heard people can't even get the beets to come out.
Judith has the same problem in her garden, too, my producer.
Well, maybe it's a big mystery for everybody, then.
Yeah.
I just wonder if it has something to do with the way the season has unfolded for us this year in terms of up here it was real cool for a while, then it got really hot, and we had a lot of rain, then we didn't have any, and I'm just wondering if it has something to do with that.
Could be. Frank, I'd try it again next year.
Okay, if I'm here, I will.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Brandon in Madison. Hi, Brandon. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
So I was, every year in early August, our squash plants, they grow a white fungus, and it kills the plants. And it just ruins our crop year after year. So I was just wondering what it was.
Where is this fungus growing?
It's growing on the leaves. It grows in the leaves and then, grows all over the leaves. The leaves grow white, and then they just crumble apart.
And would you say it looks like somebody sprinkled powder on them?
Yeah, it looks like powder.
Yeah, it sounds like
powdery mildew
on your squash. And it does have a lot to do with the humidity in the atmosphere. So let's see here. I'm trying to think of some things that you can do. Usually you have to, if you're going to use a fungicide on it, usually you have to do it before you see the symptoms. Mm. And I know that we have a fact sheet on powdery mildew for vegetables, and that it will give some idea of what you can use for that.
If you go to the Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store, you'll find that publication.
All right.
And it's free.
Cool.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Brandon. And Karen in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi. I have a tomato problem as well. The small green tomatoes look like the skin's been broken open, and then there's sort of a patch of brownish stuff on it, and I don't see a bug, and I'm wondering what it is.
Would you say it's cracked open?
Yeah, it's cracked open.
Okay, so it's cracked open, and then it sounds like some other disease has maybe come along and colonized in that cracking. We see cracking in tomatoes when they aren't growing as fast, for instance, because they're not getting the heat they want or the moisture they need, and all of a sudden they start growing really fast, and then they kind of crack open like that. We also see it, too, if they're getting too much sun on their surface, because we see early blights around here, and that takes a lot of the leaves off of the plant, and that almost opens it up to too much sun, and they get cracked because they're getting the hot sun right on them.
Yeah, it's not too much sun. I know that for sure. Up here in northern Wisconsin, we have, 6 days of gloom and one day of sun, so it's not that. I just thought if there was some kind of a bug that might be attacking them. I mean, I don't see one, but
Nope, it sounds like what we call a physiological disorder. It's growing, it's conditions of the environment. That's what it sounds like from your description.
So I've just been picking those off the plant and throwing them away. Is there anything else I should be doing?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's similar to blossom end rot, where if you felt like the rest of the tomato was okay, you could cut that part off and continue to eat it. But it depends on how severe that cracking is.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lots of calls today about tomatoes. It's tomato season, isn't it? Aaron?
It is. And, you know, we want our tomatoes so badly. And the problem is there are so many different things that can go wrong with our tomatoes, especially those early blights and Septoria leaf spot. So people are, and it is one of the plants that most people grow in a garden too.
Yeah.
You know, when people are saying, I'm not going to do as big of a garden this year, I'm going to get smaller and smaller, the one thing that's always seems to be left is the tomato. So you want some sort of success, don't you?
Absolutely. And I tell you what, I love BLTs, bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwiches. My favorite. Aaron LaFave, horticulture educator for Eau Claire County, our guest. This is her first time on Garden Talk. Always great to have new people, and she's doing a wonderful job here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening is a relaxing and rewarding hobby most of the time, but if you're dealing with disease or pests, or maybe just don't have the time to spend in the garden that you need to, it can be a little stressful as well. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today for another edition of Garden Talk. Luckily, we have some great advice, and we can get back on track and stay on top of our garden's needs when we visit with people like Aaron LaFave. She is an Extension Horticulture Educator for Eau Claire County. Happy to have her with us today. And Aaron, thanks again for spending time with us.
Thanks for inviting me. It's like I said, it's a fun adventure.
Oh, I'm glad you're having a good time. We have great calls. Callers online, and we've got some emails. We had a nice email from Jenny in Sturgeon Bay, who says, we have a couple of good-sized backyard vegetable gardens, but decided to also plant a veggie garden in the front this year. So we have a south-facing front yard, and it seemed like such a wasted space before. We planted some of the, quote-unquote, prettier vegetables in front, like the eggplant and the kale. Little concern that our neighbors might not like it, but they've got nothing but positive feedback, and she would encourage others to think about using front yard space for growing food. Also, we have planted all our garden using the lasagna garden method. It's similar to a raised bed, but it doesn't require any supplies for borders, and it's really worked well. So a couple of good comments there. Certainly, in my neighborhood, quite a few people have used the front yard space for growing vegetables, and it can look very pretty.
Here in Eau Claire, we're seeing that too, that people are using their front space for the fact that they don't have a big backyard, or that their backyard is too shaded and they want to use the south-facing front yard. And that is a concern that people have, is will my neighbors like this or allow it? And I would say it's kind of a mixed review on that. The lasagna gardening method is something that I've been using in my garden, too, along with the raised beds, and I enjoy it a lot. I think it's a great way to use extra materials in the yard, you know, the leaves, and maybe if you can get your hands on some straw, that is nice, too. And you don't have to dig through that turf and get that grass out of there. The cardboard that I put down first really does the trick.
So if you're, and maybe just to give us the Cliff Notes version of what is a lasagna garden.
If you think of mulch gardening is another way that they put it. It's layers of materials that's similar that you would use in a compost pile. And you layer it with different materials, like I said, with straw, leaves, composted materials, and vegetable scraps. You do that for you can get it up to about 2 feet. And best to start it in the fall. And then in the spring, it's kind of composted down, maybe sometimes up to a foot. And then you plant right into that medium. And I barely have any weeds. And the watering that I have to do is a little bit lower because it it really maintains the moisture. It's like a nice little sponge in there.
And get great vegetables.
I do. I mean, it doesn't look like you're planting in much, but it actually is very rich in nutrients. And what I found really works in there is things like broccoli, squash, cucumbers. What else do I have in there? Anything that was already pre-started. You can put seeds in there, but what you would need to do is move that material apart, put a little bit of soil in there, maybe only about an inch or less, just so that the seed-to-soil contact is there. So if you want to put beans, grow beans in a mulch garden, that's a way to get them started, and then their roots will start to grow down into that leaf and straw and other mixture. So then what happens is the next fall, you just keep adding more layers onto it, and it just keeps breaking down, and you eventually just have almost like a raised garden bed of just really rich organic matter.
Oh, it's wonderful. It just sounds wonderful. And Gene and Rhinelander, I want to give you a chance to join in the conversation here. Hi, Gene. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Mike. Oh, yeah, I really love this program. Unfortunately, I am a gardener with a lot of experience and no garden, so I get to be a consultant from the firm of Seymour and Do Less. Anyway, my comments are about tomato raising. Three generations of us have done this. Started out in Duluth, where the season is terribly short. So Grandpa said that he planted his tomatoes with the roots of the seedling tomato toward the surface, hopefully pointed south, and actually the tomato plant sort of lies on the ground until it realizes that it's supposed to be growing straight up. But that gives everybody a head start with warm soil so it grows better. Then in the fall, well before the first frost, you can have vine-ripened tomatoes. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. You can have vine-ripened tomatoes after the first frost by anticipating when that first frost might be for your area and starting to terrorize the poor plant. What you do is gently jiggle the plant up a little bit, dislodging the roots from the soil. And you gradually do this more and more, and the plant is terrified and says, I need to ripen this fruit.
Well, this sounds like the person who hits his apple tree with a baseball bat to get the fruit.
That sounds like a little bit of a knockout. Then, when the first frost hits, by that time all the roots are out of the soil, and you take the stake and the tomato plant, put them in your wheelbarrow, wheel them into the garage. And then in the morning, when it's warm, you wheel it back out into the yard. And those old tomatoes think they're still on its plant. And they ripen.
And listen to the birds in the background, Gene.
I can hear that. Yeah, I'll kill that bird.
No, I think that bird is fine. Well, thanks for that advice. What do you think, Aaron?
It does remind me of the same thing that you were saying about knocking the tree to get it going, because it's a little bit of stress for the plant, and it's right. She's right. It could just kind of stimulate the plant to say, this is my last way, my last hurrah to keep my species going, so I'm going to ripen the fruit as fast as I can, and then the seeds will somehow get dispersed. So, it sounds very logical. It sounds like it could definitely work. I've never heard of it, but it sounds like a fun experiment to try.
Gene, thank you so much. That's a great advice, a great story that you told us. I appreciate it very much.
I'm so glad that she's still continuing to give advice, even though she's not gardening, because that's some nice wisdom to partake for other people.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Gene. Appreciate it. I want to give Linda in Chaseburg a chance to join in. Linda, hello.
Hi. This seems to be your tomato day, because I have a tomato question too. I have 9 tomato plants in my garden. About 3 weeks ago, they started to wilt, and 8 of them now are horribly wilted. The leaves are yellow and brown.
Oh.
One of them looks perfect. And I know I did two things wrong, but one of them looks perfect. I planted them in the same spot that I planted tomatoes last year, and my garden is near three black walnut trees, but nothing else in the garden is affected. Everything looks great except the tomato plants.
Well, probably everything else in the garden is not a member of the Solanaceae family.
Okay.
Aaron, I don't know. What do you think?
Right. Do you have any peppers in the garden?
Yes.
And they're doing okay?
They're doing okay. They're not great, but they were planted when it was still kind of cold out, and I assume that was their problem.
Well, the black walnut tree does concern me a bit. Sometimes those roots can be a little farther out than we think, so that could be one of the reasons that the tomatoes are wilting. There's some other things that could be it as well. There's also something around called late blight, but those, you know, that you can kind of tell from just a visual analysis of looking at some fruit or some leaves, if you had somebody in your extension office who could do that, but I'm suspecting this walnut tree.
You are describing exactly what it looks like when a juglan from a black walnut tree gets after tomatoes. I mean, that's a...
All right. Because they do have tomatoes, and some of them are ripe. They're gorgeous. But I don't know if they're all going to ripen because I think they're going to die before then.
Yeah.
And sometimes as the tomato grows and the roots get a little deeper and longer, then they start coming into contact with that juglan toxicity in the soil. So that's why some people say, well, why did it keep going? And now it's suddenly affected. And that could be one of the reasons.
All right, so if I plant them at the other end of the garden next year, that would be better.
Well, how far away is it from the other end, away from the black walnuts?
Well, right now, black walnuts fall right in that end of the garden. They're probably 20
feet. Not going to do you any good.
20 feet. If I plant them at the other end of the garden, they will be about 60 feet away.
60 feet away from the edge of the crown?
From the walnuts.
Okay. From where they fall, it sounds
like. From where they fall. Okay.
Or from the trunks, too.
60 feet from the trunk, if it's a big black walnut, that's not going to be far enough. You're probably going to have to go with a raised bed where you can put something sort of on the bottom of the raised bed that will prevent roots from the black walnut from coming up. And then put in bring in soil. Actually, Judith put pavers in. She had black walnut, has black walnut issues, a neighbor with black walnuts, so she can't chop the tree down. So she's put pavers in the bottom of her box.
Okay.
Because she, otherwise, if the roots get up under, the roots will come because you're watering and you're really taking good care of that area, the roots are going to want to, everything's going to want to get in there. So, I mean, here I am giving the advice. Aaron, are you with me on this?
Yes, I am. I wouldn't add anything differently to what you're saying. You've hit it spot on.
All right. So, I will either do raised beds or I'll just plant tomatoes in the front yard next year.
There you go.
And Judith has, Judith's going to, it took some photos because she just built a new raised bed, she and her nephew. So she has some photos, and she'll post them up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So take a look.
All right, I will.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And while you're there, take a look at that corpse plant from the D.C. Smith Greenhouse. Jeremy in Monroe. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Oh, this is the second year that I've done the lasagna garden, and last year I didn't grow any sweet corn, but this year I did, and I had a lot of problems with, the wind kind of blew over some of the corn, and I was wondering if there was a trick to helping that to be more stable.
Well, the corn plants, they are not very deep. The roots don't go very deep, so perhaps the medium that's in your lasagna gardening is just a little too, it's a little too weak yet to stabilize those roots. So you may want to think about putting them in ground. You know, I'm trying to think of any staking techniques you could do. I suppose you could put some stakes in the ground and put some string up on each side of the stalks as they grow to kind of stabilize them. So when the wind does come, they're just kind of tipping back and forth on the string. That's just kind of what I'm thinking off the top of my head right now with corn and lasagna gardens.
And they get so tall, the plants, and they are so shallow rooted. It's
right.
Now, I trenched it out to put dirt in it to plant the seeds. What if I had done a little bit more bigger trench and more dirt? Maybe would that help?
That'll help. And I think as your lasagna garden gets older and older and more layers that you put on it, perhaps it'll get a little bit more stabilized in there too.
Yeah, it was thicker this year than it was last year. Mm-hmm. And I did, you know, you kind of learn as you go.
Right.
Yeah. But you enjoy it, but you're liking the, otherwise liking the lasagna gardening technique, Jeremy?
Oh, I wouldn't go back ever. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit more work at the end of the year, but it pays off throughout the year.
Yeah.
No weeds, and you just go out there and enjoy your garden.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. Thank you very much for calling, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. And Marge in Three Lakes, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I went into my garden about a week and a half ago, and I noticed a little black varmint run out of the lettuce. And then a couple of days later, it looked like some of my plants were wilting. Well, as it turns out, whatever it was, it chopped off every pea and every bean plant that I had. And I'm wondering what to do to have that not happen again. I did plant again.
Now, was this this was like a mouse or a...
Yeah, a mouse or a mole or something. It was fast, so I couldn't totally identify it. We tried mouse traps, and they haven't done anything.
Hmm. Do you have a fence, any kind of fencing?
Oh, you bet.
Yeah. See, to keep out critters that small, sometimes you have to use what we call chicken wire and actually put it down a couple inches into the soil, too, because some of those critters can just go right underneath the soil or dig down and you know, come up on the other side of the fence. So perhaps you need to put your fencing down a little deeper into the soil. You actually kind of have to dig a little trench and put it down in there.
You dig a trench and then you kind of make an L at the bottom.
With the fencing.
With the fencing, so yeah. That when they get down there, they start trying to dig and they hit fence.
I have in the past seen a hole like in the middle of the garden. Hmm. And so I don't know if that would even help. Is there anything like mothballs or something that I could throw in there?
Not mothballs. That wouldn't fool around with mothballs in your garden. I'm surprised that the mouse traps haven't worked.
Right. You might want to keep trying with the mouse traps. What are you using for bait?
I used peanut butter.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they're getting so fed on all your other vegetables, they're not interested in the peanut butter, unfortunately. But maybe you want to try multiple. I'm just kind of brainstorming here. Multiple traps with different kinds of baits in them. And with the hole in the ground, I'm wondering if maybe you have those 13-line ground squirrels coming up. And then that involves trapping, live trapping, or things like that.
Rat trapping. I didn't notice the tail on this. It just looked like it was about, maybe 4 inches long and really dark. And
that
fast.
Sounds more like a mole.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, I'd keep the traps out there and see what you can come up with, and maybe even change, put some peanut butter. But you might also try a little apple.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
On one or both on one, and even wrap a little cheesecloth around it so they have to work on it to get it.
Okay.
Scott Craven loves to do that. Our wildlife ecologist, that's how he gets them.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Voles, I think, are probably the answer. Bob, one of our listeners, says he thinks it's a vole, too. And great comment from Deborah. on Facebook regarding cucumbers. We were talking about cucumbers earlier, and she said, having just had this discussion with my California brother, it's always good to remember that cucumbers and all other squashes start out with all male flowers. So for those questioning why they aren't getting any fruit, you need to be a little patient. As soon as the female flowers start up, the cucumbers and the others squashes will start forming.
Yeah, and that's based on temperature. And off the top of my head, I wouldn't know what that is. But sometimes if it's too hot, that you're right, you won't get the female flower.
So there you go. And we've got Lou in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm trying zucchini in a pot, and the leaves on the bottom keep on just turning yellow and dying off real quickly. I had two small zucchini that turned yellow and basically fell off, and I've got two about 3-inch ones that look okay now, but I'm just worried that they're not going to stick around.
How big is that pot?
I think it's about 5 gallons.
Yeah, I'm wondering, also, have you done any fertilizer for that?
I did a slow release in the dirt, and then a little bit of, like, the liquid fish mixed in with the water, but I haven't done that recently.
Yeah, sometimes things that are grown in pots, we put so much water in them that it just leaches some of those nutrients right out the bottom, and I imagine that zucchini plant has taken a lot of water.
Yeah, I try and... At first, I thought it wasn't getting enough water. Now I'm worried that maybe I overdid it.
Yeah.
that could be. Usually, you think of this. Before you water, stick your finger down 1 inch or 2. If you feel moisture, leave it alone.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But perhaps a little fertilizer might help.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Judith just posted some photos. We've got a hummingbird. Is that a hummingbird nest? Just a hummingbird in zinnias that a caller sent. It's up on my Facebook page, so I hope you have a chance to take a look at that. And from Jerry, some beet advice and some general advice. For many years, my beets took forever to grow. Leaves are brownish. This year, I added nitrogen, which made the leaves a nice green. Last year, I started watering more. This year, after a month of beets doing nothing, I started watering more, and the beets started to kick in. Over the years, I've always been surprised at the dryness of the soil when harvesting vegetables, even when we had days of rain. So, you know what? Vegetables require water.
And a lot of times we think they've had enough water because the surface looks nice and moist, but if you just dig a little bit, sometimes you'll find that water hasn't even soaked down a quarter of an inch. It can be surprising. So really get down there and get that finger dirty and just, like I was saying to the other caller, look down a couple inches and to see what's going on.
Aaron, you did a wonderful job. I hope you'll be agreeable to coming back and be with us again.
I would love to.
Aaron LaFave, Extension Horticulture Educator for Eau Claire County. She did a wonderful job, didn't she? We'll look forward to having her back and talk with her more about the garden. It was a lot of fun, as it always is here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Have a great weekend. Stay with us. There's a lot more in store on the Ideas Network.